Good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased to be here today, and at least this year, as unlike last year, my presentation wasn't competing with the World Series of parade, so I missed that by a couple of days. So today I'm going to be talking about creating and applying guidelines and criteria to disability inclusion in physical activity, nutrition, and obesity initiatives and policies. The findings and conclusions in this presentation were funded under the contract with the National Center on Health, Physical Activity, and Disability, NICPAD, at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Jim Rimmer, right here, is our PI. And the Prime Award came from CDC, and for those of you scoring at home, there is the grant number, and I won't go over that. I'd like to mention this project is dedicated to the memory of my longtime colleague, Lita Jans, who passed away after a long bout with breast cancer. And now I can tell you that I have no relationships to disclose. Let me give you an introduction here to NICPAD, and I'm sure that if you have any questions, Jim will be happy to answer them for you. Or Amy. Oh, sorry, Amy. Amy will be able to answer. Wait, raise your hand, Amy. There you go. So NICPAD has five goals. The first goal is community leadership. We're making connections on the ground with people in the community who can interact directly with people with disabilities. And if you were here in the last session, it's really this inclusive community kind of idea. And we're initiating coalitions with communication plans, sustainability plans, policy networks, and training libraries. The second goal, which if you've been around for a while, you might know it as the old NICPAD. It's basically the library and database of the best practices, resources. It creates new knowledge. It shares information with the community through consultation and online media. The third goal is really the communication of the findings of the center into the field. The fifth goal is the training in the field. And goal four, which is what we're going to be talking about and where this talk originates from, is the development of new inclusive policy guidelines and the criteria to provide recommendations on how to promote inclusive programs, practices, and services. And we are also doing stakeholder analysis of state, local, national programs, providers, and organizations who will help determine the acceptability of the guidelines. So I want to talk, before I introduce you to the guidelines themselves, I want to tell you a little bit about the process. We went through a literature review to begin, which helped us to develop the guidelines, and we reviewed a few major items that were really the backbone of the whole event. First was a 2009 instrument to evaluate guidelines that was put together by the AGREE Next Steps Consortium. And AGREE stands for Appraisal of Guidelines for Research and Evaluation. There was also an adaptation criteria set that was created by Jim Rimmer and his colleagues under some DRIP funding from NIDRR. There's a 2009 paper called Guidelines and Criteria for the Implementation of Community Health-Based Promotion Programs for Individuals with Disabilities, and that was the main author on that was Charles Drum. Charles is not here today, no, okay. And then also my report to CDC on the applicability of people with disabilities of the Guide to Preventive Community Services. We also looked at a series of wide range of materials of national strategies in physical activity, nutrition, and obesity, such as the CDC Healthy Communities Program, the CDC Community Prevention Guide, and other literature papers. Out of that literature review, we then developed the draft proposed guidelines and implementation steps. Following that, we had an expert panel, which included 13 different members. I'm not going to go through each one of them, but although some of them are here, and you can raise your hand if you'd like to, if you were on the panel. They represented national disability experts, nutrition, physical activity, and prevention experts. They were representative. There was a director from the State Office of Disability and Health. We had disability policy and legal experts, and we had representation from large HMOs, public health, and school district representation. So what they then did was they reviewed the guidelines in an online process and came up with detailed quantitative and qualitative feedback. We had created an online survey for them to respond to start, and that gave us this feedback, and then we were, as well as feedback on implementation steps, and then we refined the guidelines based on those results and sent the revised guidelines and criteria back to the experts for their review. In some meetings earlier this year, the panel members reviewed it and approved the criteria for evaluating the guidelines, and then their discussions led to additional refinement. And at the end, at the conclusion, the panel unanimously approved the guidelines for disability inclusion. Let me tell you a little bit about these criteria for evaluating guidelines, because we feel that this is really important to make sure that we understand that the guidelines are something that has gone through a rigorous process. There were several criteria that were important. First was reach, that the guideline was likely to have to affect a large percentage of the target population. Sustainability of the guideline, or the guideline needed to demonstrate sustainability, it had to have the potential to endure over time. That there was transferability, that the guideline could be implemented in communities that differ in size, resources and demographics. It had to show utility. It will assist state organizations and others to plan and monitor community-level programs and strategies. It had to have feasibility, so it required knowledge, skills, staff, equipment, and other resources to implement the guideline, and that are not exceedingly prohibitive to put into place for the target population. And it needed to show inclusion. So it needed to be likely to promote the inclusion of people with a wide range of different disabilities. Given that, these now are the 9 guidelines that we are going to now take national and be promoting. The first one is that the objectives of policies or programs need to include people with disabilities. So they should explicitly and unambiguously state that the target population includes people with a range of different disabilities. And we even identified the actual disabilities that we were talking about. Cognitive, intellectual, and other developmental disabilities, mobility, visual, hearing, and mental health disabilities. So I think that what's important to hear here, H-E-A-R, is that we are pointing out to programs to say not only we're going to include people with disabilities, but name it and say these types of disabilities. So this was a really amazing step that the panel really took this step. And I think this is very, very exciting guideline. The second guideline is around the involvement of people with disabilities in the development, implementation, and evaluation. So, program development, and I'm reading these because I want to make sure that we're including everyone who may not be able to read it. Program development, implementation, and evaluation should include input from people with a range of different disabilities and their representatives. And by that, we mean community members or other experts with disabilities, potential participants with disabilities and their family members, personal assistants, and caregivers. The third guideline is program accessibility. The programs should be accessible to people with disabilities and other users socially, behaviorally, programmatically, in communication, and in the physical environment. The fourth is around accommodations. Programs should address individual needs of participants with disabilities through accommodations that are specifically tailored to those needs. The fifth guideline is outreach and communication to people with disabilities. The programs should use a variety of accessible methods to outreach and promote the programs to people with disabilities. Sixth are cost considerations and feasibility. The programs should address potential resource implications of inclusion. This includes staffing, training, equipment, and other resources needed to promote inclusion. This is a major one because, as I'll tell you in a moment, cost, as you can imagine, is the major concern. Affordability. The programs should be affordable to people with disabilities and their families, personal assistants, and caregivers. The eighth guideline is assuring process evaluation. Programs should implement process evaluation with transparent monitoring, accountability, and quality assurance that includes feedback from people with disabilities and family members, personal assistants, caregivers, or other representatives, and a process for making changes based on the feedback. And the last guideline is outcome evaluation. Programs should collect outcomes data using multiple disability appropriate measures. And you've been hearing already a lot today about, you know, these outcomes and how we need them. We want people to take on, when they take on, making their programs inclusive, that they do so in a way that the outcomes data really can show and demonstrate the inclusivity. So these guidelines for disability inclusion were developed to increase the number of national and state community transformation program and policy recommendations that are inclusive of the needs of people with disabilities. The guidelines, we think, are going to be used by government entities and organizations that are creating, implementing, or overseeing program initiatives and policies in the areas of physical activity, nutrition, and obesity. We think these guidelines are intended to be broad enough to cover a variety of local, state, and national programs. They will be used to assure the inclusion of disability as government agencies and community organizations develop plans to implement community health promotion strategies that are based on national recommendations. And these guidelines can be used to evaluate whether plans and programs effectively include people with disabilities. We have also been having a stakeholder analysis that was done for this. This has been done through our NICPAD project by the American Association on Health and Disability, AAHD, as well as my group. And we solicited feedback from key stakeholders regarding implementation of these guidelines. And the responses to the survey were intended to increase the opportunities for collaboration and decrease obstacles for implementation. And we had 15 stakeholders, as you can see there. They included federal agencies, state and local public health organizations and associations, and disability-specific associations. What we've seen is basically an enthusiasm about the guidelines. They believe that the guidelines would benefit stakeholder organizations and constituents. And as I mentioned earlier, the budget constraints, they feel, are a potential barrier to the implementation of the guidelines. So we are going to be, in the next steps, we're going to be finalizing the input from the national and local stakeholders. We're going to be developing a toolkit to help people implement this, and that will deal in that toolkit is where we're going to be dealing with this cost issue, as well as each one of those guidelines will have its own section. We'll have examples in that as well. And let me also call out to all of you. I know that a lot of these guidelines are nothing particularly new to any of you who are here. You've all been in disability for a while. None of these things, I'm sure, is at all earth-shattering. But for the people outside of this room, it may be very earth-shattering. So one of the things that people would like, so that we've heard so far, are examples. So if you have examples of any of the successes of any of those 9 guidelines, please feel free to send those along, and we'll try to incorporate them if they fit in a good way to demonstrate how somebody has dealt with any of those guidelines. We're going to have wide dissemination of the guidelines through the AHD, through NICPAD, through the State Offices of Disability and Health. And in the coming year, we'll be having webinars and technical assistance that will be taking place about these guidelines through NICPAD. And if you need more information about this or want to contact me for any reason, there's my contact information, lkraus@centeronDisability.org, and my phone number, 510-285-5600. And I sped through that, so we have more time for questions later.